The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with a bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Oh yeah! Woo. UFC Vegas 55 post show, baby! Whoa! Spit the shizzing city!
And Mayweather more.
Oh yeah, and Mayweather. Yeah.
Oh, that's part of this too? Okay. Well,
I
here
hope
we
so,
are.
Because that's the only reason I'm here.
Well, the music is very exciting for a card that has created a little bit of controversy, especially in this main event. In the end, it'll go in the books as a split decision win for Ketlen Vieira over Holly Holm, and Twitter is fired up. Now, I decided to stop scoring the fight after the fourth round, and I just made a bold, not really a bold proclamation, but an accurate proclamation that two things are going to happen. One, we're going to go to a split decision, and two, most people are going to be pissed off about it. And I think we definitely accomplished both of those things, because Ketlen Vieira won, and Twitter is on fire about it because a lot of people scored this fight for Holly Holm, but she didn't win. It's going in the books as a win for Ketlen Vieira, a massive win for her, and let's talk about it. I am Mike Heck. I am joined by the Prince of Positivity, Alexander K. Lee, who got to cover some wild boxing today. How are you, my friend?
Listen, we got a special poll up for anyone who was, it might be a bit, I don't know if anyone is up now that was still watching the Mayweather-Moore slash, you know, Anderson Silva fought in the card thing. So there was a 90-minute break between the second fight of the undercard that went down in Abu Dhabi today and the Anderson Silva appearance. And during that 90 minutes, they played the same three or four Abu Dhabi tourism slash propaganda ads over and over and over and over and over again. So the poll, if anyone wants to see the poll, it just says, summer in Abu Dhabi, it's everything you want and so much more than you'd expect. And right now it's everything you want is leading at 50%. So people, I heard that phrase. So I know you're saying, like, why didn't he just mute it? It's like, well, because I'm doing other things. And then, like, so I kept the sound on just in case they're like, oh, Anderson Silva's coming out now. So I had to hear the same ad over and over and over again. And it drove me literally insane.
Well, I'm glad you have survived all of that and you are here with us. So we'll talk a little bit about the Anderson Silva boxing match and the Floyd Mayweather boxing match in a little bit. But we need to start this main event, AK. Ketlen Vieira defeats Holly Holm. And you are our resident robbery reviewer, if you will. Is this a fight you are going to go back and watch to do a robbery review on? Did you watch it with everything you had going on today? And if so, is this one you're going to go back and watch again to do a robbery review?
Yeah, I will. No, I will. I will because, again, you know, robbery criteria can there's a bunch of reasons to want to do it. Sometimes it's just the way because I feel. But also, when there's this much public uproar, then you have to do one because it Robbery Review is sort of meant to reflect the reaction of the general populace, which is why when if anyone reads those articles, I put in a lot of like people's reactions and because I want people to have context for like, oh, why are we doing this? Because sometimes there's people like, oh, this fight's so obvious. Why are you – it's not a robbery. Why are you doing it? And it's like, well, because I mean I might not think it's a robbery, but I don't think a lot of fights are robberies. So I have to see what a lot of people are saying. The media very much disagreed. Casey showed the MMA Decisions graphic on the post-fight press conference show, and it was like 18 out of 20 or something like that. There you go. Thanks, Casey. Put it up for Holly Holm. That's like 85% of the media who scored the fight for Holly Holm. So clearly, whether I agree or not, there is a discussion that it's a robbery. I was checking the replies. I was checking – I threw up a poll. I'll read the results right now on MMA Fighting on our Twitter. 81% say Holly Holm won the fight. So again, I don't know if I agree that it's a robbery. I even scored it for Holm. But a lot of people are saying it's a robbery. So yeah, I'll definitely take a look at it. It has to be reviewed. And it's one that really does need to be watched closely because it's like, you know, was Holly Holm just clinching or was she doing damage in the clinch? When they were exchanging, were they exchanging evenly or was Vieta landing the harder shots? So I think at a first glance, depending on which fighter style you preferred more, I think it's really easy to say, oh, Vieira won, it wasn't close, or Holly Holm won, it wasn't close. But I think if you watch it again, you can really understand why either score is like totally fair. So I lean towards Holm. I'll do a robbery review. I think you guys can tell I'm sort of leaning towards, I don't think it was a robbery, but you'll probably find out on Monday.
Yes. I mean, numbers don't always tell the whole story. Holly Holm definitely outlanded Ketlin Vieira throughout the 25 minutes. I think it's pretty clear that when Ketlin landed, it meant more because there were points where Holly was kind of on wobbly legs at a couple of times. It wasn't at any point where it's like, oh my God, she's badly hurt. But there were a couple of shots that Ketlin Vieira landed that definitely got her attention and definitely had her changing pace a little bit. So overall, AK, are you excited to go back and rewatch this main event to do this robbery review?
I actually kind of am but again, I'm you know, when I'm doing a robbery review, I get to kind of look at it in a different way and kind of have fun with it because it is fun to scrutinize and sort of pick apart every little thing that happened. I mean, this is a luxury that the judges do not have. So I am very like, I probably have been pretty lenient with criticizing judges over the last like year or so or 18 months whenever I started doing robbery review, even before that, because again, we bring it up a bunch of times. Yes, the judges have a monitor they can see, but they're also pretty much trying to watch the fight from their angle. Depending which angle of the cage they're at, they're going to see things differently. They're going to see things land with different impact. So, and again, they don't have the benefit of replay, and they don't always have the best angle. So when I do rivalry review, it is rarely, except in the case of like Diego Sanchez, Ross Pearson, it's rarely meant to be an indictment of the judges because they don't have that luxury. Because I'll be watching, I'll be pausing, I'll be replaying sequences. So yeah, I'll be watching the fight very, very differently. And in that sense, I do kind of enjoy it. I do enjoy picking it apart. But like, is this a fight I'd watch again, just like put it on because there's something to do? Probably not. But like, it wasn't the worst fight ever. And I do think there's value to analyzing it and trying to figure out why it was scored the way it was.
I know we're going to make our official picks for matchmaking on to the next one tomorrow morning when we record this program. But Ketlin Vieira came out and said, I want a title shot. I want the winner of Juliana Pena versus Amanda Nunes. And if Juliana Pena wins, maybe there's a case to be had. But even though Ketlin Vieira won, and I know we don't want to count our chickens before they hatch, June 11th, Valentina Shevchenko is getting ready to defend her title against Tyler Santos. And I think most of us feel very confident that Valentina Shevchenko, however she does it, is going to win this fight and retain the title. So even though Ketlin Vieira won, is Valentina Shevchenko the biggest winner here? If she goes out there and beats Tyler Santos, does she have a very strong case right now without Holly Holm in the picture that she might go after a second title at the end of the year?
I mean, Valentina, I think, has been wanting to do that for a while. She's also been enjoying just defending the flyweight title, but she's always wanted that third Amanda Nunes fight. She feels she won the second one. A lot of people feel she won the second one, which I always think is a super – again, that's a coin toss fight for me, super close. But somehow, the further we get away from that fight, the more people think it was like, oh, Shevchenko clearly won. That's a whole other discussion. So she's always wanted that fight. Dana White's been kind of wishy-washy on it. You know, it's come up a bunch of times after Valentina fights, after Amanda Nunes fights, and he's never quite committed to it, maybe because he remembers how bad the second fight was. Also because, you know, I guess he thought, well, both women still have a reasonable line of challengers. I don't know if that was the case with Amanda Nunes after a while. Shevchenko, look, again, she should have first priority when it comes to getting a bantamweight title shot if she wants it, but... now that we have a date for the Juliana Pena Amanda Nunes rematch, UFC 277, July 30th, if Pena loses, I think they'd go with the rematch, right? I think they'd do the trilogy, Pena and Nunes, right? Yeah, so then I don't know. Shevchenko loves to stay busy. I don't think she's going to want to wait around. She probably defends her title again. And yet I also don't think that Vaeta did enough to necessarily guarantee herself a title shot. Not to say she can't get it. It's very possible nothing happens in 135 over the next 4 or 5 months. And again, Shevchenko decides to defend the flyweight title instead. And, you know, maybe Pena is still the champion and she needs a challenger. They would throw Vaeta in there. They would throw Vaeta in there. Again, it'd be a tough sell, but she has put herself – she did enough to put herself on the short list. Not a surefire number one contender, but she's right near the front, and I would just tell people don't be surprised if she somehow gets – if her next fight is for the UFC title.
Back to Holly Holm, one of the big questions heading into this fight was the layoff, the age, 40 years old now, hasn't fought since October of 2020. How will she look? Will she look 40 while she's fighting in there? And there were some occasions throughout the broadcast where they felt like Holly was a little bit slower than she normally is. And we always talk about Father Time and how it's undefeated. Did you feel like Holly Holm didn't really look like herself? Do you feel like she looks slow in there tonight? Because the broadcasters, especially DC Felder and Dean Thomas especially, felt that Holm looked pretty slow tonight. Did you agree with that?
Yeah, listen, it's the defense that goes. Just like in, you know, I watch a lot of basketball. Just like, let's look at, here's an example. I'm not comparing Holly Holm to this guy, but let's like look at LeBron James. LeBron James this year was phenomenal offensively. Defensively, maybe one of the 5-10 worst players in the league. And you probably have to watch the games to know what I'm talking about, but like he literally has kind of just stopped playing defense. Because that's what's going to go. Defense requires like quick reflexes and things like that. That's the first thing, fast twitch muscles. That's what goes when you start getting older. So Holly Holm, a lot of times tonight looked like the old Holly Holm. I think offensively she had moments. Again, her clinch work always great, her athleticism, her strength, her ability to just kind of, you know, get a hold of Vaeta and just kind of push her to the fence and hold her there and go to work against the fence, that was still there. But she wasn't quite able to like get out of the way of things like she used to, or at least like, you know, slip punches like she used to. She got hit clean a lot, more so than in any fight she's had since, again, some of the fights she lost. And then the last time she fought Valentina like really picked her apart. And I wouldn't put Vaeta's striking on the level of Valentina Shevchenko. So Kellen's very much improved, but for her to be landing clean shots like that and occasionally lighting Holly Holm up like that tells me that Vaeta's improved and also Holly Holm just declining a little bit. And look, 80% of Holly Holm is still a great fighter, but it is hard to be, look, she turned 40 years old, a lot of combat sports mileage in boxing and MMA and a long layoff. So I thought she looked pretty good tonight, but I don't blame the commentators at all for pointing out that, yeah, she might've lost a step, especially when it comes to avoiding damage. Cause she got hit a lot tonight by Kellen Vaeta.
She was pretty deflated after the defeat. Future uncertain, one step forward, another step back is what she said. She's very adamant she won that fight, not thrilled with the two judges who didn't score it for her. And I thought Caitlin Vieira's comments were pretty interesting as well. She thought Holly Holm tapped during that rear naked choke. That was super close. And if we're going to give Holly Holm any credit at all in this fight, I think probably the turning moment in the fight, or one of the most, probably the most significant moment of the fight, was that choke and Holly Holm getting out of there. Cause I didn't think there's any chance she was getting out of there. It looked like this fight was a wrap for Caitlin Vieira, but somehow Holly Holm wills her way through. I didn't see any tap there. Maybe Caitlin, I didn't really see anything. Maybe Caitlin felt something in the moment, the heat of battle, if you will, but I didn't see a tap. You didn't, right?
No, I didn't think so. Again, I think that is just a credit to Holly Holm's toughness. Like, how she's really difficult to put away. We were saying on the preview show that she's only lost to Misha Tate, Jermaine Durandami, Chris Cyborg, Amanda Nunes, like Valentina Shevchenko, the best of the best of the best of the best. So she's really tough to put away. Like, Vaeta choking her out would have been shocking. I mean, I know Caitlin Vaeta is a really good grappler. It would have been shocking for her to just put because even Misha Tate, she won by submission. That was in the fifth round, right? So no, it didn't surprise me. I didn't think there was a phantom tap. Initially, I thought she grabbed the fence, but she very lightly kind of just like had her hand against it. They showed the replay, and yeah, it was kind of a chaotic sequence. I can see why people might have thought phantom tap. I can see why people like me might have thought, oh, she grabbed the fence or something to, you know, get out of there. But no, it was just kind of some flailing, and then her kind of calming herself and being very finding a way to kind of get her shoulder in there and just turn her way into the choke and then get out of there. But yeah, Vaeta had that grip on tight. That was that was the most exciting moment of the fight, right?
We will discuss what's next for Caitlin Vieira and what is next for Holly Holm tomorrow on to the next one. What we think will happen for both women. Co-main of NAK, Michelle Pajeda gets it done. He beat Santiago Ponzinibbio. I didn't think there was any robbery here at all. I know Santiago Ponzinibbio was very upset about this. This is not a robbery. I scored it from Michelle Pajeda. I thought he won rounds one and two. I thought the Ponzinibbio was clearly taking the momentum over in that second round, but I thought Pajeda had done enough to win that round, and I thought Ponzinibbio won the third. 29-28 Pajeda is how I scored it. There was a 30-27 Pajeda, I believe, within that scoring. I don't have a huge problem with that either. If you scored it anywhere from – and I think Sean Sheehan, who's kind of the media mogul for how judging works, this guy knows the criteria better than most. He said anything from a 30-27 Pajeda – to a 29-28 Ponzinibbio, all of those things are acceptable scorecards. So your thoughts on Pajeda's performance, and did the judges get this one right in your opinion?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I mean, I was leaning towards Pajeda. You know, I picked Ponzinibbio to win, probably because I'm such a Pajeda fan, and I'm just like, I don't know. I haven't been able to let myself believe that he's actually a contender at 170 pounds. But I mean, he certainly is after tonight. Again, beating a guy who's in the UFC rankings, not in our rankings, but is, you know, in somewhere in the top 20 if we extended our rankings out that far. By far his, you know, most veteran and revered UFC opponent yet. And he fought a great fight. Jed and I joke all the time. We hate to see the more technical. Well, I joke about it. Jed genuinely hates seeing the newer, more technical, successful Michelle Pajeda. He'd rather that he'd be like a 500 fighter who's still doing crazy ass flips and stuff, which I'm not against either. But I like that he's winning fights. This is five straight now. It would have been six if he hadn't gotten that DQ against Diego Sanchez because he was dominating that fight. And he's legitimate. It was a great performance. You see how technical this guy is, how like effective he can be when he mixes that one-of-a-kind movement and that crazy size at 170 with technique, with patience, with, you know, picking his spots, with toughness, resilience. I mean, he's been tested twice. The Andre Fialho fight, he took some hits. He definitely took some hits in this fight. So he's shown a resilience too. For anyone who thinks he's all style and all flash, like, no, he can get into these kind of back and forth wars and survive. Now, if this had been a five rounder, would Ponzinibbio maybe have run away with it in fourth and fifth? It's possible. It's possible, but I also think Pajeda would have fought the fight differently, so it's hard to kind of look at the fight that way. But yeah, very impressed. Definitely could have gone the other way. This is a two straight splits against Ponzinibbio now. That has to hurt, but neither man's reputation is hurt very much in my eyes, and I think they both have plenty of great fights ahead. And for Pajeda, maybe a big money fight? We'll talk about more on the show tomorrow, I guess.
Yeah. Very interesting post-fight comments. He's got an issue with Jorge Masvidal because Masvidal sent a prayer emoji to his wife and to him, and right. He wants answers but won't get them anywhere else but in a fight with Jorge Masvidal. And he called out Nate Diaz. Let's be clear. The Nate Diaz fight, never going to happen. I'd be shocked if the Masvidal fight happens. There are some fun ones at 170 for Pajeda, which we will certainly talk about tomorrow. By the way, AK, since this has become, once again, a huge topic, and I want to shout out Michelle Pajeda for his discipline because he's telling people he weighed 211 pounds at the start of his training camp. He looked like a freaking light heavyweight in there compared to Santiago Ponzinibbio. It's incredible that he gets to 170. But has the main event, the co-main event, and other fights we have seen over these last few weeks, including the Logan Storley MVP fight, has this changed your opinion at all on open scoring? Are you in favor of open scoring? Do you want to see it more now?
Our good pal, the eminent Ara Helwani, tweeted something like, "I see no argument against open. I can't see any argument against open scoring now after the main event." And like tonight was like, I think the main event again was like one of the worst examples of a fight. Like what would have changed tonight's main event with open scoring or the co-main event? Like, I don't understand what, like, people need to know, I'm not completely against open scoring. Like, if it would happened, I'd be the last person that would like fight. I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. They should try it. And, you know, just so people can see why it's not like this cure-all. What would have changed in the main event? Like, that's my, I don't understand. Would Holly Holm, if she knew she was down, become Pride era Wanderlei Silva and started going out and throwing bolos? Like, Holly Holm fights how she fights. And she probably thought she won that last round anyway. So it's not like she changed anything. Oh, I'm sorry, she did win the last round on all three judges' scorecards. So yep. I just don't understand what is the – and I get it. She could have changed things in the fourth round too, because I think the fourth round she lost, right? It was almost like the alternated round. First round to Holm, second round Vieta, third round was split, and then fourth round Vieta, fifth round Holm. Is that right?
I think the third round was the swing round.
The split. Yeah,
that
yeah,
was the
split.
Yeah.
Vieta took it on two.
There it is. Yeah, right. Yeah, so, 1 and 5 for Holm were consistent, and then 3 sure. was 2 and 4 were consistent, and then 3 was the swing round.
I don't understand. Like, that shows you how little like distinction there was. Like, how what would have changed for Holly? She's not going to come out swinging and looking for a finish or doing anything crazy in the first round. That's just not how she fights. Some fighters might be able to do this. Like, that's the case for open scoring. Some fighters might. There's a lot of fighters who they're not going to change what they're doing, the way they fight their fight. Especially if they thought that they won the other rounds. I mean, yes, it'd be nice to know that they didn't. But again, I'm not against. And it would, I don't know what it would have changed the Pajeda Ponzinibbio fight. Those guys were killing each other in the third round. So what difference would it make? So there's examples to be made for it. I just think tonight was like nothing. I didn't see anything tonight that made me go like, oh yeah, open scoring is going to fix these results. Like, what? No, the people fought their fights. Nothing changed. They didn't change anything.
What's weird about the whole open scoring talk was like earlier on when it was first brought up and Invicta started doing it, I was like, all right, this is interesting. Maybe we could try it. And now the more that it's become a hill people have are dying on right now. Like, this is it. Like, if there's one thing we could change, it's open scoring. But judging is not going to change anything. Like, we're just going to know how bad the judging is after every 5 minutes. Sure. So instead of complaining at the end of the fight about judging, we're going to be complaining all fight long about the judging. And I'm not ready to live in a world like that, AK. Listen, not.
And here's the thing. Here's the truth. Most fighters and fans don't know how the scoring works. This is a fact. So I see all these fans. I'm sorry. I got to stop reading the YouTube comments. I see all these fans going like, oh, well, this is how it should go. It's like, I guarantee you have no idea what the F you're talking about, and you don't know what the criteria is. So, no, I'm serious. And people go like, oh, the judges don't know what they're doing. Like, yeah, look, listen, there's a lot. There's some bad judging that happens. But, like, I guarantee these judges are like the vast majority of the judges, are not all of them, are way more qualified to score these fights than any of these fans who are sitting at home are like, oh, this was a robbery, or this fight wasn't close. Oh, Holm won. It wasn't close. I'm like, if you think it wasn't close, you have no quality. You shouldn't be watching MMA, much less judging MMA fights. So I'm sorry, I got a little fired up there. I just wish people would be like, just be a little more critical. Like, just look at, like, make sure you understand the scoring. Ponzinibbio was trying to steal rounds with takedowns. Did you see that at the end of every round? He's going for takedowns.
Yep.
That's not a thing. That's not a thing. That's what's so infuriating to me. It's like clearly someone like Ponzinibbio, who's been fighting forever, still lives under this myth that, oh, I could steal this round if I get a takedown. That's not a thing. There's no stealing rounds with takedown. So I don't know. There needs to be improvement across the board. I understand. The judges need to improve for sure. But I think fan understanding, fighter understanding for sure. And the media and how we communicate this. Maybe we're not doing a good job of getting the message out there and getting it out there on how fights should be scored. Maybe, and there's some disagreement on it too. Maybe that's a problem. We disagree on it. But I would just ask, well, just be a little more educated about it, because so many fights that you think are robberies or aren't close or whatever, if you just looked at the criteria, you'd be like, oh, okay, I could see why it was scored this way. And I don't need to be sending mean DMs to whatever judges make the mistake of being on social media.
You know how you steal rounds in 2022? You do what Juros Medic did in the first round of his fight today. Morales was cruising to a 10-9, and then you landed a round shifting, momentum shifting shot with like 5 seconds left in the round that really had Morales on wobbly legs. And that's how you steal a round, because Morales is winning almost all of it. Medic landed that big shot, stole the round in my eyes, and then went on, was probably losing a bit of the second too. And then he just went out there and just threw absolute bombs at his opponent, at Omar Morales, put him away, and gets a huge win. So momentum shifted then.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Ooh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet, toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Did you agree with the bonuses? I mean, Tejeda's Ponce de Bio, no-brainer. That was the fight of the night. But the performance bonuses went to Chidi, which I don't think is too surprising with that frickin' elbow. But young whippersnapper Chase Hooper got himself a bonus for a TKO finish, which not a lot of people had on their bingo card. So did you agree? I think we can agree with the fight of the night. I think we can agree with Chidi. Did you agree with Chase Hooper getting a bonus tonight?
Yeah, I actually did. You know, at first I was thinking, oh, well, Chase Hooper is kind of like a, you know, a beloved UFC company guy. He's like a Fight Pass. He like works for Fight Pass. They love him. I thought, oh, is this just him, them giving him the bonus because, you know, he is sort of a UFC dude. But then I thought about it. He wasn't just being rewarded for the finish. Like, that was a really good performance through two rounds, and then he capped it off with like a TKO. So, you know, like the TKO is not as exciting as a Chidi and Jaquani elbow, but you know, performance of the night bonus, I like that they changed it from, you know, from just knockout of the night or submission of the night, because then performance for me should encapsulate everything that happened in the fight. So yes, you want to reward cool quick finishes, like when Njokwani knocked out Powerbar last time in 16 seconds, that's great. But when someone puts together a strong almost three round performance plus a finish, that's worth 50 G's. The other way to go with it would have been Gelson Almeida, but I'll go with, and I think Casey would agree, Gelton was a pretty heavy favorite, despite certain members of the media thinking that Parker Porter might be able to pull off the upset. This guy. But Almeida was a big favorite, and it kind of went exactly as people expected. So I guess you don't necessarily give him the bonus for that. But I mean, I think his performance was more dominant than Chase Hooper's, and I think we are seeing a guy who is a legitimate contender. So if you factor that in, he could have earned it. No problem, though, with Chase Hooper winning it. I thought, again... taking out account his whole performance and not just the finish, worth 50 grand.
I picked Parker Porter as well to win a decision, but he needed to get out of the first round. I made that abundantly clear.
So he's close, get Mike. Out of the first round. So close. You, Jed, and I, we all said that's how it was going to go. We all said like, oh, we know he's going to get dominated. We knew he's going to get dominated in the first round. We knew it. But he could have, he had the gas tank, right? Like we thought, what was the time of the stoppage? It was,
435.
Well, he had a long way to go.
Yeah, 25 seconds. Yeah, he was in trouble. I was like, damn it. There are certain moments where I thought like he could get in a guard, maybe gets back to his feet. There are certain moments where he kind of looked like he was going to put a submission on, and like he was just going to try to use it to get up, and it just didn't work. Jelton's just nasty. Guy's so big, so strong, such an athlete. And yeah, he is about to fall into that rare category of where Merab is and where Shafkat Rakhmonov is and Arman Tsarukyan, guys like that, where there aren't going to be a lot of 205ers who are going to be like, yes, let's fight that guy. I'm so excited. He's going to have a hard time moving up the ranks, I think, because he's going to have a hard time getting people to say yes. So it's a great win for him.
You might have to stay at heavyweight. Mike, you might have to stay at heavyweight. I don't know if anyone at 205 wants to fight this guy.
Hey, listen.
He's scary, dude.
I think he would do pretty well at heavyweight too if he decided to to hit the weights even more and bulk up to like 235, 240. He's going to be a problem for a lot of those guys at heavyweight because he's such a freaking athlete. Junyoung Park gets the split decision win over Eric Anders. That was a fight, AK, as you like to say. That was a fight. Tabitha Ricci defeats Pollyanna Viana. She gets the unanimous decision there. I thought the judges got that one correct. Joseph Holmes did what many expected him to do. Gets a submission win of Alan Amadovsky. You have to say, and you don't like to say these things, but you have to probably venture guess that the world, the UFC world, that is probably no longer open for Mr. Now 0-3 in the UFC. We mentioned Jelton Almeida, finish.
Amadovsky, they gave him another chance. He had a long layoff. I was surprised he actually wasn't released during this long layoff. So they gave him another chance and didn't work out. Yeah, I think you're right, though.
Yep. We mentioned Uros Medic. Great performance for him. He's back on track. Jonathan Martinez with a Jonathan Martinez-like performance against Vince Morales. Just beat up that leg. Just didn't really understand Vince's game plan here. He just was not aggressive. He just kind of stayed at distance and just let Jonathan Martinez kick him in the leg over and over again, which was kind of surprising to me. I thought Morales was going to be much more competitive in this fight, but that was not the case. Great win for Chase Hooper. As we talked about, that fight was insane. And how about Sam Hughes, AK? Gets on the board, gets a finish. She's got two wins now. She's on a winning streak. She puts Elise Reed away. She wore her out real fast, and you could tell like early in that third round, Elise Reed was just like, I don't really want to do this anymore. She's trying to she's leaning up against the cage, throwing karate sidekicks, just being like, all right, this is really all the energy I have left. And then Sam Hughes is like, well, I'm just going to go ahead and take you down and then finish you. So good win for her. Pretty fun card.
Second win in 35 days.
I know. Look at Sam Hughes coming around.
Not in April.
The move to 4-7 MMA paying off 2-0 since joining forces with Saif Saud. So there you go. That's the card. Those are the bonuses. Let's go to the peeps.
Hey.
Casey's here.
Hey, Casey.
Hello, Casey.
Oh, I about muted your mic when you had your open scoring rant, because I'm on Team Hilwani 100% on open scoring.
I just don't care anymore.
What difference would it have made?
The fighters deserve to know the score.
That's I know, but just tonight. But tonight, why?
I think it's really interesting because Ketlin came into that fifth round thinking she had to get a knockout, and because she thought she had to get a knockout, to me she actually lost, and she lost that round easily. I thought the fifth round because she was going for that knockout, but she already had the fight won. I just think it's really interesting that Ketlin kind of fought differently. I don't think she'll admit it because she kind of said some weird stuff in the post-fight presser. I think she said God wanted her to win or something like that. I don't know.
Sure.
But for Holly, I think it's unfair because Holly's a very strategic fighter, and you fight differently when you're trying to win rounds versus knowing that you have to get the knockout. And I think it's unfair to say Holly, if Holly did that in round two, she'll do that in round five. Holly's a much better fighter than that. If she knows she has to get a finish in round five to win, because by going to round five, she was already down two cards. She was down 3-1. So if Winklejohn and her coaches go to her, goes, you have to get a knockout. We're not doing any clinching. We're not doing any of this. No takedowns. You're just throwing bombs and head kicks. Holly Holm can do that. She just doesn't need to because they don't know the score. You know, so it's dumb. It's dumb for her to fight that way unless she has to fight that way.
And that's she hasn't finished anyone in 5 years. She has two finishes in the UFC. I don't think she could just turn it on and
Yes, you absolutely can. Holly Holm's I've trained with Holly Holm. She's mean.
In an actual fight, I don't know. Yeah. She hasn't knocked out anyone in 5 years.
You don't think she can knock people out if she wants? I mean, that's you fight to win.
Then she should fight to win.
You don't fight to the knockout. You fight to win. Okay. And that's the thing. You fight to win. You don't fight for the knockout. But even regardless of that, before we go to the questions, open scoring is not about entertainment. It's not about the fixed judging. Actually, open scoring does nothing for judging. It's all it is so you know the freaking score. That's all it is. Just like if you're playing baseball, if it's a close, you're like, I need to know if that was a ball or a strike, because that determines how I was swinging on my next pitch.
That's not how baseball works.
No,
MMA cannot be compared to any other sports. No, I never want to hear only batting.
I'm not talking like the scoreboard. I'm talking about batting. Right. You need to know if you need to know is it a 3-0 count? Is it a 3-1 count? Is it 0-2 count? You need to know because that changes how you swing. That changes everything. And that's the same thing for fighters. They need to know. And they deserve to know that. And I understand it will never happen because it totally screws up gambling. And that's why it won't happen.
Well, I mean, the live odds, I guess there'd be some things to that, but the one concern I have, and if here's the only way I will be like, okay, cool, let's do it this way, is if everybody can know the score except the three judges. You have to work it out that way. You have to work it out that way. None of the judges can know, okay? None of the judges can know how the other one scored.
Right.
Because that's going to mess with the judge's mind. Because if they know, if there's one judge who scored it for the other fighter and two of them scored it for the other one, they're not even going to be paying attention to the fight. They're in their mind, they're going to be half paying attention to the fight and they're going to be half thinking about what did I get wrong? How did I screw that? Do I need to make it? Do I need to get a baseball terminology? Do I need to do a makeup call here to even things out? So as long as the judges have no clue how the other two judges scored, the fighters can know. If they want to put it on the broadcast, that's cool. But then you kind of take the fans out of it without knowing that are in the building. Yeah, but I just don't want any of the judges to know how the other judges scored it. And I think we're okay. I think we might be able to make it work.
I like that. That's definitely a caveat I'd want to see, yeah.
All right.
But that's a whole other show.
Yeah, that's a whole other show. All right.
Maybe we can do a poll about it, AK.
The poll that I have there will stand. I want everyone to feel my pain.
Oh, yeah, before you
Let's talk about
outside of the Abu Dhabi commercials. Okay. Yes, how was the Mayweather fight? How was the Anderson Silva fight? By all accounts, I didn't watch either of them, but by all accounts, it seemed like Anderson Silva. If these weren't exhibitions, it seemed like Anderson Silva easily won his fight, and Floyd Mayweather easily won his fight. Apparently, Floyd Mayweather was having more fun than he's ever had in his life in there.
I think I spent more time watching Abu Dhabi commercials than actual in-ring time. I think if you add up the amount of in-ring time there was compared to the amount of commercials I had to watch, it was like clear win, a 10-8 win for the commercials. Anderson was way bigger than this guy, Bruno Machado, an actually pretty decent MMA fighter. He's actually doing good stuff in the UAE Warriors promotion. And he looked a little bit happy to be there, his opponent Machado, a little bit like, oh my gosh, I'm getting to like effing Anderson Silva. Like, he certainly never thought that was ever going to be in the cards for him in any context. So he looked a little bit happy to be there. It took Anderson maybe round and a half to kind of find his rhythm. After that, he was picking them apart. It was not the most exciting fight. It certainly wasn't as fun as the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight, and not as grim as the Tito Ortiz bludgeoning. But you did get to see, again, as you said, more of Anderson just kind of enjoying himself, living his best life. And afterwards he was like, you know what's next for me is like, I'm going to hang around, UAE and do a jiu-jitsu tournament now. Cause that's, you know, he's retired from MMA. Right. So it's like, I've always wanted to do this. I want to go back to jiu-jitsu and do jiu-jitsu, and then he can do boxing again. So, you know, everyone's calling for the Jake Paul fight. Maybe that sometime gets, you know, in the cards somewhere between, the end of the year or next year. Jake Paul acknowledged both of them, Mayweather and Anderson Silva in a tweet saying, I could beat both of them in one night. Very kind of,
oh, for God's sake,
not the most original call out, but at least whatever, it's out there. And Mayweather also, by the way, was clearly having a lot of fun. Mayweather, not a person I like, I will say, I think a trash human being, but if you enjoy watching him fight, this was a very enjoyable exhibition against a former training partner in Don Moore, who was game enough to hang in there with Floyd and pretty much let Floyd do what he wanted to do, because Floyd was dancing with the ring card girl, dancing in front of the cameras. He grabbed the ring card in round seven and walked around the ring. He could hear the announcers talking. So the announcers would be saying things about it, and he'd be responding. He'd be like, yeah, I do that. Good point you made about me. So it was an entertaining exhibition main event. Considering this thing was thrown together in a weird way after it was supposed to happen on a helipad in Dubai last week, big missed opportunity. It actually kind of went off okay. Even one of the undercard fights with Persoon, her fight was really, really fun to watch. And Badu Jack smoked some guy in 46 seconds. So not like a terrible if it wasn't for all the commercials, like, not a terrible card to watch. It was only $20 USD, which is like $400 Canadian, but you know, whatever, it's fine. I'll live. Who needs to eat, right? So
expense accounts, baby.
Oh yeah, hopefully. Fingers crossed, hopefully. So yeah, it was okay. It was fun to watch. And yeah, if you guys want to see Anderson Silva box, yeah, that's it's going well. His box careers are going just fine.
Hashtag visit Abu Dhabi.
Please don't.
That's right.
Hashtag summer in Abu Dhabi.
So is that what it was, summer in Abu Dhabi?
I will never spend summer in Abu Dhabi now.
Oh my God, it is so. Oh, okay, let me talk about how the. It is next level.
It's probably 5,000 degrees there.
It's like, imagine like Death Valley temperature with like Florida swamp humidity. It is unreal. And this is in the night when it's like no sun. It was, but man, the water park there is awesome, by the way. So go to the water park if you go.
Hashtag summer in Abu Dhabi. All right.
Send me that check. Princes, sheiks, saw them. Yeah.
Yeah. The biggest winner was the Abu Dhabi tourism. Yeah. Do we do Vieira? I'll ask you, Casey. Vieira versus Aldana 2, number one contender fight. Your thoughts on that?
That sounds like the fight to make. This is prize fighting. UFC's a business. Vieira isn't, she's just not that needle mover. She just doesn't. It's just a fact. She's a very good fighter. I thought Holly won tonight, but it was a super close fight. I still think Holly won, but I would love to see Vieira and Aldana because, I mean, that's MMA math. You know, Holly defeats Aldana easily. Aldana knocks out Vieira, one of the best lady knockouts we've seen in the UFC in years.
100%.
100%. Yeah, rematch that fight. It's definitely a competitive fight. Aldana can win. Vieira can win that rematch. And then that gives time for the potential if Nunes wins and Nunes Pena trilogy. And obviously you have Shevchenko. You know, you want to throw Shevchenko in there too. So, yeah, Vieira's just not the name yet. To get a title shot, but you know what, Talas, I don't even know. Santos, what's her name? Tyler Santos.
Tyler.
She's not a name either, but she got a title shot, so it could be all wrong.
Yeah, I mean that's probably the only fight you could make right now.
Yeah, and unless, is Aldana like, injured just no right now? Yeah, she's just one of those not long injuries. She's just.
Yeah, I'm not sure. When did she fight? When was her last fight? I know she won. It was that JoJo Calderwood, right? Was it Calderwood? No. Who did she beat? It wasn't JoJo Calderwood.
Who were we talking about?
Irene Aldana.
Kunitskaya.
Kunitskaya, that's what it was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she Kunitskaya. Good. Yeah, yeah.
She missed weight. Kunitskaya. She also missed weight by quite a bit.
Oh, Aldana missed weight. But, yeah, okay. And so she hasn't fought since, it's been in, okay, it was in July of last year. So it's coming up on a year soon. So yeah, let's see what's going on with her.
Her fight with GDR.
Valentina Shevchenko's number one contender, in my opinion.
The fight she was supposed to have at 268 with GDR would have like been such a logical number one contender's bout. It's a shame that one fell through, and sent the bantamweight divisions back spiraling into just like uncertainty.
Because GDR messed up both divisions. Just like her going in and out. It's just it kind of did weird.
For sure. I like the fight though.
Yeah, I love this fight. I love this fight. I think this fight needs to be on a pay-per-view main card. Maybe a main event for a fight night. But it needs to be some sort of featured fight that a lot of people are going to see that people know has lots of value to it. Don't just throw it on a random card.
I thought you were going to say it has to be on a helipad in Dubai.
That's every fight. Yeah.
Let's do it. Maybe we could do the Hockey Wars fight. Have you seen the clips of that tonight?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Michel Pineda has 39 pro fights, only 28. Guy's a machine. Guy fights.
Yeah,
all
I don't
time.
That sounds crazy. Like I just like yeah, a lot of people are like, he's not 28 or like I don't know. What else we got here?
He's got like Carlos Condit pacing right now.
Yeah.
With his career.
Oh, here's a good question from Mr. Boza.
Joseph Boza, should we take Michel Pineda seriously at welterweight? He now has won 5 in a row, plus he fits at welterweight more than he did at lightweight.
I'm not sure what that means.
He fought at lightweight? When did he fight at lightweight?
No.
I think he means middleweight.
Yeah.
I think. I'll say Joseph Bolt. He definitely has not fought at lightweight.
We can just ignore that last part. It's,
let's end it at five in a row. Should we take him seriously? Should we take him seriously at welterweight, AK?
Yeah, no, you have to. You have to. The matchmaking with him has been really good. They've given him... Once I think they figured out that he's not... Like, you know, look, they tried to... what was it? The Nico Price fight and... Chaos Williams. Back-to-back. I think they were kind of hoping... They're like, oh, man. Like, there's still that crazy Michelle Pajeda in there. We're going to get these. It's just wild. I mean, you throw him in there with Nico Price. It'd be insane. And again, these fights were okay. But you did get sort of the more kinder, gentler, more mature Michelle Pajeda that we've seen. The one who's focusing on winning fights, you know, not taking crazy risks and not completely blowing his gas tank, doing flips and jumping off the cage and things like that. And I think now they realize that, they said, oh, he's like a serious. Who is he supposed to fight instead of Fialho? Was that always the original matchup? Oh, Muslim Salikov,
That's right.
Muslim Salikov, which also would have won both a fun fight and a guy who I think was higher than him in the rankings. So I think that was a logical matchup. Then he ended up fighting Fialho instead, which is fine, great fight. And then now they said, okay, let's really see if we have a contender here. There you go, Santiago Ponzinibbio, longtime veteran, a guy who's been in the top 10 before. So he should be taken very, very seriously. I think he has a style that's really competitive. I think even with some of the best guys in the division, I'm not saying he's going to, you know, beat Kamaru Usman tomorrow or anything, but you give him a couple more top 15, top 10 guys, and let's really see what we have here. Because we talked about, he's got that mixture. Yes, he's got the great style. He's got athleticism. He's got size. He's got speed. He's so fast for a guy. For a guy who's fast, bigger than most of the welterweights, this guy is super fast. He's got experience. We said for a guy who is allegedly only 28 years old, has almost 40 pro bouts. Like, that's what you want. I wish the UFC signed more of these guys who were like, you know, so experienced. And whatever, maybe they don't have crazy, like, you know, 20-1 records, but have like 22-7. Because these are experienced guys who, when you put them on the big stage, you never know. They're going to put it all together and you actually find yourself the contenders. So I think that's where Demolidor is right now. And I hope the matchmakers, again, don't push him up too fast. I think the Masvidal match would be perfect. Mike, we've called for that before. I think he's called for it before, and we've been like, yeah, he should fight Masvidal. So I'd love to see that fight. I don't know if it happens. Wonder Boy, another option. I think either of those logical next steps for him.
Yeah,
that's the answer.
The Wonder Boy one makes total sense.
That's the fight.
Yeah, that's the fight. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's absolutely the fight.
Me and Mike, yeah.
We're like, no. Yeah. Wonder Boy, maybe. Yes. That's the one.
I don't see Wonder Boy really having any issue with that fight either. It seems to fight that would make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, he wants to fight July 30th, it looks like. He wanted the Dustin Poirier fight, which would have been just fun for fun's sake, but no real stakes there. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of where Wonder Boy is right now. You know, his last two in a row and got kind of dominating both of those fights with grapplers. This one he's gonna stand and just fight a guy who's gonna, and Wonder Boy's a pretty decent size welterweight as well. Mm-hmm. He usually walks around right around 200 pounds, so yeah, I think it's a good fight.
I know the UFC won't allow it, but this is one of those fights that both fighters should agree to, let's just fight this at middleweight, you know, like let's just train hard, Get lots of fluid in our brains so we can just punch each other as much as we can. There's no reason. I don't know. I don't think Michelle Pereira is ever gonna fight for a title, but I think he is a legitimate top 15 guy now, according to UFC's rankings, not the real rankings that matter. I don't know if he breaks into the real rankings yet, but for the UFC rankings wise, it's a perfect fight, and I hope it happens. And yeah, and there's no reason for those guys to cut all that weight. Just fight at 185.
Let's give this guy a chance to make a run. You know, let's give him a chance to make a run. Worst thing that can happen is that
Michelle Pereira deserves the opportunity. He deserves the opportunity for sure. He's earned.
Worst case scenario, he loses a fight and then he goes back to just like fun, crazy fights. So it's doesn't hurt either way. Let's see what he's got. Let him go and see how far he can take this thing.
And Pereira versus Wonder Boy is a fun, crazy fight that actually has relevance to the division too. So
for sure,
win. Here we go.
You go ahead. Thoughts on Chidi Njokuani after his win against Todorovic? Looks to be a problem in this middleweight division. Chidi's the real deal, Casey, is he not? This guy is just super fun. This is a guy who, when I found out he was fighting on the Contender Series, I was like, what? Why is this guy fighting on the Contender Series? This makes no sense at all. He should just be in the UFC. He should have been in the UFC like 3 years ago. It was just I mean, cool moment. Like, we put him on the Contender Series. Like, he's like, the fact that he's on the if you don't know, now you knows with Dana White is just blasphemous to me. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows who this guy is. Everybody knows. Everybody who's a fan of the sport, who's like on the fence, like in the middle between casual and hardcore, knows who Chidi was before the Contender Series, before all of this. Now look at him. He's got two big wins, two big knockouts. He's cashing checks like crazy. What do you think? Real deal? Problem in this middleweight division? Is this a guy who can actually make a title, like a title run at 185, Casey?
I'm not going to go title run, but I will say he is the real deal, though. He is a very exciting fighter. He's the fighter that UFC wants. He's a fighter that I do not understand why Bellator got rid of him. I understand Chidi. I was joking online, look at this Bellator washout. He lost to the top guys in Bellator. So, but he's not a washout. He's clearly a quality professional fighter. And yeah, as long as he stays healthy, he should. I hope to see him four times a year on UFC cards. He's an exciting fighter, and win or lose, you're gonna see an exciting fight. And I think that's what the UFC wants. That's what the fans want. And he has that it factor. And when he wins, I get to hear his smooth voice, and that's all I want.
Yeah, aka your thoughts on Chidi.
Yeah. Oh, and real quick, that freaking elbow! Oh my god, just beautiful, and so. You know, I don't think you need to train MMA to understand how much that must have hurt. You know, like just to get that force on the right here in the temple was just, and the way Chidi grabbed Dusko's head and just like, chef's kiss. Sorry, it was just. Great. Enjoy the 50K, sir.
AK, do you approve of the way Chidi mixes the martial arts?
I don't know if I go that far. As we all know, mixing. You know, this is why I enjoyed watching the boxing earlier today. I tweeted earlier. I was like, man, it's if only Anderson Silva had stopped mixing the martial arts earlier in his career. You know, where would he really be? How much greater would he be? You know, Chidi. Yeah, look, to look at the question, he is the real deal. I mean, he's so same thing I said with Michel Pajeda when I was talking with Michel Pajeda, this thing about like signing veterans, signing people with experience. Like this, I was also thinking about Chidi and Jacquawani. Like I know you'll look and go like, oh, a guy who used to fight for Bellator and like and he's 33 years old. Like what does he bring to the UFC? Like the UFC needs to sign more just good fighters. You know what I mean? Like. There's a reason we in the media sometimes complain about too much like Contender Series signings and now whoever the God help us, whoever they're going to bring out this 30th season of The Ultimate Fighter. I it's great. I love people getting the opportunity. That's fine. But Mike, like you said, guys like Chidi and Jacquawani should not even force to go through the Contender Series. If he's on a Contender Series contract, that is absurd. I mean, this guy again is he's experienced. He's well-rounded. Like these are guys you should be promoting more. I'm glad they put him on the main card. I think they do kind of know what they have with him. Mm-hmm. I'm glad he's got a couple of performance bonuses, so at least we know he's got an extra 100 G's, you know, in the pocket. That's great. These all make for a good story. But I want to see UFC sign more of these guys. I know they love to push, and this guy was great tonight, like the Chase Hoopers, guys that are like, oh, we discovered someone in their 20s, 21, 22. We're going to make them into a star. And that's cool when that works out, like one out of 20 times. Other times, there's a lot of good fighters out there, and I wish they would bring them in and give older guys more chances. And because 33, I get it. I know we're saying, oh, well, how much fights does Chidi and Jacquawani have left? Can he really be a contender? It's like, who cares? You know you're going to get quality fights out of him. It's like Casey said, if he gives you three or four fights a year, you're giving your fans a quality product. And shouldn't that matter too? So, yeah. Hey, he strings together some wins, gets a number one contender's belt. I wouldn't be surprised, but that's secondary to just having a nice quality guy on the roster. You can throw in there with top 10 guys, you can throw him in there with up and comers, and you're going to get a good fight.
Yes. 3-9.
Yeah. After tonight, yeah.
That's an excellent comment right there.
That was you gotta worry about the safety of the fighter. Fire safety first. Those things are 3-9. No. That's too dangerous.
Yeah, if you want to do like, you know, you want to do 4-10 or something like that, it's okay. But 3-9, that's where we draw the line. We'll take like one or two more.
What we got here? What we got? Just a comment we kind of mentioned earlier, real quick.
Almeida, the new Hamzat like fighter. Dude's real good.
Yeah, we have. When was the last time we had a light heavyweight kind of Hamzat? Has there been one for a while outside of John Jones?
A grappling
Yuri?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well,
nothing means yeah. Like, I mean like grappling. Like dominant grappling that.
Well, not grappling wise. Just a new boogeyman kind of coming out of nowhere. You know, kind of.
Oh, Johnny Walker through his first two fights.
Oh yeah, yeah. I guess Johnny Walker. Yeah.
This guy could fight John. This guy might be able to beat John Jones.
Yeah. It was Jiří, and then Jiří came in and like immediately set the world on fire. Yeah. And yeah, I think you probably put Volkan Ozdemir in there too before he fought for the title.
Oh yeah,
against DC.
People forget he was knocking that guys dude. Out in second. He's putting guys away in
no
seconds.
Time.
Oh yeah, Volkan. Yeah, you're right, Volkan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, Volkan was a good one.
You're right.
So but Almeida's he's next. Almeida's real good. I think Almeida's ceiling is higher than a lot of those guys.
I'm very curious. I'm very curious about him. Yeah. Where does he train? He trains in Brazil, right? He lives and trains in Brazil.
Yeah.
Okay. We gotta talk to Jeremy. I gotta get more information about this young man. He looks scary. He beat up my favorite fighter, Parker Porter. What a jerk. He's so good.
Parker Porter. Maka could have kept going too. He just needed 25 seconds. Yeah. Just needed 25 more seconds.
That guy was ready to gas. Almeida was the one who was really in trouble. Thank God he got that choke and got out of there.
Then Almeida got up and celebrated, and he wasn't even like breathing heavy. I'm like, oh, maybe I read this totally wrong.
He looked pretty good. He looked pretty good at heavyweight. I'm not gonna lie.
What was the original fight? Was that wasn't originally a heavyweight?
It was
fight, right?
Him versus Max Griffin. Light heavyweight.
At 205.
Light heavyweight. Yeah. Okay.
But, like, right. Who wants to fight that frigging guy on short notice? Of course, Parker Porter steps up. He wants to go.
Yeah. He rules.
Parker he saw Porter. What we saw, Mike. I'm telling you. He saw what we saw. He's like, man, if I can, I know it's going to be a tough first round, but if I can get out of it.
Yep.
Good for you. That's good right. For you, Parker Porter. Good for you for taking that fight.
Yep. No stock. He still gets the Arlovsky fight in my eyes, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
He deserves kudos in a new contract for taking this fight. Yeah. More money. I mean, come on. Paka really won tonight.
This is a good comparison. When Sirkunov came on the scene, he looked scary. As a
the broken jaw. Remember when he broke Alex Nicholson's jaw with a freaking neck crank? That was insane, dude.
Yeah.
Dude, that was nuts. That was nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're good, gentlemen.
Sounds good to me. AK,
we're great.
Get some rest, my best friend. See you tomorrow morning.
Well, we can. It's everything you want won the poll, by the way. Summer in Abu Dhabi. It's everything you want and so much more than you'd expect.
So listen, everybody. Join us for on to the next one. Join us for our regular programming next week. It was a good card. Solid B-, I would say. I think that's a pretty fair grade.
Yeah.
And no UFC event next weekend. It's Memorial Day weekend. It's also next on Friday's 10th wedding anniversary for this guy and the lovely wife. So how about that? Yeah. Wow. Very happy. Very excited.
On my birthday? The same
birthday?
Day?
27th?
No, it's not.
Wow.
It's never my birthday. It's never my birthday.
You calling Negassi a liar?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Apologies to Negassi. Jeez.
All caps, 3 exclamation points, bro. All right, we're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow for on to the next one. Thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful rest of the night, everybody. And hashtag summer in Abu Dhabi.
Helipad fights.
Yes.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.